This is Matches Below, and you're watching Citywide Blackout. Justice for all.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. Very, very excited to have you here. Max Bone on the mic, along with the one and only Curtis Hughes.
Hey Max, how's it going? Welcome everybody to the show. And dude, you are all amped up today.
I am very psyched. I am very, very, very psyched actually, because this is an interview that I've been very much looking forward to. Our next guest is someone I've been watching and stuff on YouTube since around 2020 when, you know, something occurred. You know how people say like, oh, so-and-so kind of got me through this difficult time? Not gonna lie, the humor was a huge boost for me, and I've been watching his stuff consistently since then. Now he's on this brand new foray into music as well with his new project. It's called Brother Band. He has an EP out called Little Fish. The real GMAT, guys. Yes, the real GMAT joins us. Welcome to the show, man. I am very happy to have you here.
You know, I'm so happy that you want to talk to me, because last night I was lying in bed and I was like, it's just authors and musicians and all these brilliant minds on the podcast. And I was like, this feels like a real downfall, a real low moment for the podcast to go from authors to fart jokes. I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah, and you know what? You'd be surprised how often like bodily humor gets into the show, you know. although sometimes we're talking like the horror writers, it's usually like blood and guts, but still bodily humor. Someone finds that.
Gotta check yourself every once in a while on this show.
Exactly.
Yep. Like I said before the podcast, I'm very, very sick, so there'll definitely be some noises and fluids and sniffing. So there'll be some body stuff going on.
Excellent. Well, you know what? Then we can check that box because that's all set. But man, let's, you know, dive right in, because there's so much to talk about. Of course, as I mentioned a second ago, back in December, you launched this new music project called Brother Band. You got your 3-song EP out, Little Fish. And I think I saw a post on your Instagram. I was like, okay, I want to check this out. And then listening to the songs, I was like, Jesus Christ, he's really, really good. He's damn good. So I was just like, okay, that's going on the playlist, because I was just blown away by it, frankly. But leading to a question eventually, how did this one come about? Like, how did you decide to say, you know what, I'm going to put out an album and, you know, record some music?
Well, I didn't even think this had come up, because it's such a, sometimes I think I have ADHD, and I used to, you know, when I needed to keep myself busy, I'd focus on like an editing project or something like that. But now that my work has become entirely content based, and I work for Watch Mojo as well, and my day is just filled with creativity, I'm starting to get a bit jaded towards what I do and getting a bit bored. And doing the album was literally just me saying, I want to try this thing, see if it's any good. And to be honest, not to be a massive bummer, but I'm not going to go any further with it. I just wanted to show myself that I could do it, that I could record an album and make it happen, and just stretch my creativity out that way. And then, you know, I did it, and we did an album launch gig, and that went, it was phenomenal. And literally once we like packed up, I was like, all right, cool, I'm done. Back to fart jokes.
Wow. Back to losing your shit, watching like horror games.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah, but it also gave me a new perspective about what I do and everything as well. And just let me, I don't know, just let me stretch a little bit so that I could come back and enjoy what I do again. Not that I wasn't enjoying making content. It was just,
yeah,
it was becoming, you know, monotonous, and it was the same thing over and over again. I just wanted to do something else for a little while. I have something to focus on that wasn't work.
I hear that, man, because I think it was last October I hit this point where I was just like burnout. Like, I was not enjoying the show anymore. I was just sort of going through it to just like get through it. And I said to Curtis, I said, dude, we're going to take a break. It was supposed to be a month, and then it was into like January. Like, okay, I think I'm ready to start to like talk about coming back. So, but we came back with some plans. Yeah. We actually made some significant changes to what we did, and the end result is, I think, a much better product. And like you said, sometimes you need to be doing something else. And then you come back and you think, you know what? I really enjoyed this now. Like the energy and the life is like back to it.
We took a year-long break from our podcast, the GMAT podcast.
Oh yeah. I love the show, man.
We did. Oh, thank you. We did 232 episodes for over like, I don't know, 4 years or something. And then we all got to the point where we went, this is not fun anymore. And we've been open about this to everybody. And when we came back as well, whatever it was originally, it wasn't anymore. It was becoming a chore to get together and actually do it. So, we made the choice to stop, and we had a final episode, and it was fun and nice, and it was really sad as well, because it was, you know, so many years of our life, even though it's such a small thing, it meant a lot to us. And then when we came back, that sort of year-long break, an accidental year, we just sort of at some point we were like, you want to come back? And it just happened to be almost bang on a year. And we were like, all right, what was the problems before? What was working? What wasn't working? And we had time away to individually already have those answers when we came. And, you know, when we had a meeting about it and we're like, what do we want to do? Everybody knew what they liked and what they didn't like. And it's made it really easy to kick it off again.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's all about stepping out, you know, and just taking a step back and looking at the bigger picture and figuring out, you know, what you like, what you don't like, what works, what doesn't work, you know, format changes, whatever. So
yeah, a break is good as a holiday.
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty
is that
much.
The saying? What's the saying?
Exactly.
A rest is as good as a holiday. Know. Yeah.
That works. I like that. Okay. So this is just like a one-off for you. You don't see yourself coming back and saying, pick up the guitar again, maybe do some more songs?
Well, I mean, I play music all the time. Like, sure. Music's always been a hobby, but I'm probably not going to pursue it so aggressively where I'm like trying to sell out a gig and trying to sell the album and all that sort of stuff. That was just me just taking it to another level, just, you know, testing myself, seeing what I could do. But to put that much effort in consistently whilst trying to, you know, build my own channel, I'm like, I don't need that. That was fun. That was something I wanted to, you know, push myself with. But I've done it now, and I feel like I did it successfully. I wanted to write some songs and put out an album and do a gig, and I checked all those boxes.
Nice, nice. All right.
Yeah, well, you know, we're both very impressed with the quality of the songs on the EP. And, you know, one of the questions that we definitely had for you was, you know, do you have any sort of formal musical background or audio training? Because it's very, you know, like I said, it's a very good quality song, all the way from, you know, the songwriting itself through the, you know, the production of
it. No, I don't think I have any formal music training. I went to university for performing arts, but that was all acting. There wasn't a lot of music. I did some music stuff, like, when I got to my honors year, so I don't know if it's the same in the US, but like to get your degree, you do 3 years of a bachelor, and then you can do an extra year to, you know, get your bachelor with honors. And in that year, there ended up being like six students. This might sound like a generalization, but they were all shit. Everybody in the class was a very average performer. the teacher kind of dumbed things down, and I got a little bit bored. So we were all working towards doing a performance at the end of the year, like writing our own show, doing our own thing. And I was like, a whole year to work on one show. Are you fucking kidding me? So I said, I was like, can I do two? Can I do one in the middle of the year and one at the end of the year? And she liked me. So she's like, sure. So I wrote a musical, and that was the only time I did any music at university. But I grew up, I'm trained in sax. Sax was my instrument at school. I did that for like 8 years across my schooling, and played in the, you know, the junior band and then the intermediate band and then the jazz band, and got really into it, went to all the jazz festivals, and then spent the majority of my high school just ditching classes to go hang out in the music room and, you know, mess around with instruments. So I always, when people say ask me a question about music or like what I play, I always say, I'm not great at anything, but I'm good at a lot of different things. I'm not even that great on sax. I'm even though it was my main instrument. I just sort of, you know, I just it's that ADHD thing again. I never wanted to just focus on one thing. I was just trying a bunch of different stuff and messing around and, you know, starting bands at school. And I met this girl named Stevie, and her family were a family band. They would play gigs on weekends and that. And they were, that her dad was just wildly talented, an unreal guitarist. And he sort of took me under his wing, and they would bring me to play gigs and, you know, teach me about sound and all their equipment and that. So me and Stevie started doing, by the way, I'm so unbelievably sick that this story has no flow. I'm just jumping from spot to spot. But yeah, so me and Stevie would play together, and when the family went and did gigs like far away, they would take me with them, and we would open for the family band. And so I sort of, in terms of training, I just sort of did it on the scene, you know, on site training. And then Ben Jay from our podcast, we met at university, and he is, again, just an unreal. I think it's a case of me surrounding myself with people who are better than me at stuff, and then learning from them and having fun playing around with them. And, you know, so me and Ben would just jam whenever we got a chance. And then he came and played guitar on this project as well. And, you know, it's just meeting cool people and practicing and messing around. But no form, apart from, you know, saxophone lessons, no formal training.
And I'm pretty sure there isn't actually any saxophone in this EP.
No, there's not a single bit of sax, unfortunately.
Ironic.
I wasn't feeling that bold.
Yeah exactly. Exactly.
Well, again, we're talking about the EP, Little Fish, and you've got some great tracks here on the album. Tell us some of the stories behind the song.
Oh, well, to be honest, I always kind of wanted to keep it to myself. You know what I mean? Because I feel like it might ruin the mystique of what, because none of them really are about one single thing. There's a lot of different, like I'll tell you about one track, Smile, which sounds miserably depressing. You know, the lyrics in that song are like, I want you back, I miss your laugh, I miss your smile, like all this sort of stuff like that. And I had just, you know, not 6 months before that, come out of quite a long-term relationship. So when I pitched this song, whenever someone heard this song, they were like, hey, just wanted to, you know, check in. Are you doing all right? I'm like, I'm doing fine. And they're like, is everything okay with? And they would mention her, and I'd be like, oh no, I don't give a fuck. But it wasn't, because it wasn't, it was about so many different things that unfortunately none of them were about her. It was about, you know, I had lost some close friends. We'd had a falling out over a episode of the podcast that we'd done. They didn't like our the takes that we put out there, and we had a pretty substantial falling out. I'd also, like, at that point when I was writing the songs, there was something like where I worked out across my relationship and from where I was like 5 years ago to where I was now, there were parts of myself that I was like, what happened to happy Matt, to optimistic Matt and sort of immature Matt? I was just so bogged down in bullshit. There was like parts of myself that I missed. Like, there was a lot of different stuff like that. Then I invent these stories. I create these stories, so I have something to focus on when I'm writing the lyrics, which makes it significantly more easy when you're not trying to write about something that actually happened or something that's real. When I write the songs, I just want a hook, like just one thing that I can focus on. And, you know, Half Star Bay, the hook was Half Star Bay, like this place, this world that I'd created in my head. And once I could visually see that, it made writing the lyrics so easy. I was like, oh, I know this place. I can write about this place. I can, yeah. I hope that answered the question.
It does. Yeah, it does.
It does. Absolutely.
I I gotta say, Half Star Bay was my favorite song from the album. I think I think the first one on it, I think. And just listening to it, I thought, damn, that one just kind of like blew me away, frankly. So like right off the bat, that was hooked. But I want to ask about the cover for this thing, because the cover art for this thing is beautiful. Who did that?
Oh, now which is it? The one of me sitting on the couch?
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's Well, I stole that from the musical that I wrote. So that was made by an artist named Jesse Kleitman's. I think he's Jesse Kleitman's Art on Instagram. I can send you a link if you want to put it in the information or anything.
Oh, definitely will. Yeah.
And he's been friends with Ben for years. They're friends from school. They live together, and every time we do anything, like Ben and I used to write plays and tour shows, and we would get him to always do the art for us. So when I did that musical back at uni, 6 years ago, he did that artwork for that show. And I asked him if this was okay. And he was like, okay. But I just took that and then just got into Photoshop and just scrubbed out the original title, which was Arrow, and just changed it to Little Fish.
Huh. Cool.
You know?
Awesome.
Yeah. And so I'm just I was on a budget.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I was like, nobody saw that show. Nobody saw that musical. That was a university thing. I could reuse it because the artwork's great.
Oh, it's
and then there's going to be that one time. Right. In the back, in the corner, that you didn't see. It's all going to come back to you.
That's how it always goes, right?
Well, I put it out there now. I own the story.
Exactly. It's yours now. No one can take it. Yeah.
That's
phenomenal, dude. I love that. All right. So since we have guests from all over the place, one of the things we like to ask is about the music scene in their area. So I want to ask you, are there any places that you like to go to, for shows, or places that you might want to, if you got back into this, maybe perform mm-hmm. it someday?
I'm such a, I'm the worst person to talk to about music because I don't, I'm a real, I stay at home. And when I'm going to gigs, I'm getting dragged to gigs, and I have a great time.
Right. Every time you're like, I don't want to do this thing. Fuck this thing. You get there. This is fucking amazing. I should do this more often. Why don't I do this more often?
I don't know, but no, I'm not really, I'm not a part of the scene, so I wish I could give you a cool answer.
Right.
I really do, but I've got nothing. I don't know where to go for good music in Melbourne.
Sure, that's honest though.
The girl who was on my album, Charlotte McCosh, she's got a Instagram music page. She's doing so much better than I am, and she pursues music, and she's phenomenal. But she's posting all the time on her Instagram. She's playing shows all around Melbourne.
Now, did she?
So play I can recommend her.
Yeah, exactly. We'll check her out. Actually, did she play with you on Half Star Bay? Was she on that one?
She sung. Yeah, she sung in all the tracks. Okay. She was doing backing vocals. Yeah, but yeah. No, she didn't play anything. She gotcha. But I just loved her voice, and we'd done musical theater together when we were kids, and I just been watching her blow up. And I just messaged her one day and said, hey, can you come do this other voice? And it was her actually that had the idea with Half Star Bay. Because originally, Half Star Bay is a story about two people. My perspective of the story is oppressive. I'm constantly singing and telling the story from my perspective. And it was her that had the idea of her singing the last line just by herself. Because she's like, there's two people in the story. There's two perspectives. And I'd written those last lines as the sort of, the person within the story's realization of what the truth actually is. And she's like, well, instead of your voice realizing that, why doesn't the other voice tell you that? And I was like, yeah, that's brilliant. And that's not her being like, I want a solo, that's just her mind. Mm-hmm. It was a good idea.
Oh, definitely.
And it's sort of out of nowhere. You don't really hear her anywhere else in the album just by herself. So I thought it was a nice touch.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, man,
I think like the best ideas creatively are the ones that come out of like absolutely nowhere. You just like walk around, all of a sudden you think, huh, I should like do this thing. And you do it and it becomes like a brilliant idea.
Well, we had no idea what we were doing when we got to the studio. We like, I had the outline, but we'd booked up, sorry, my dog's drinking so loud. we went and I just said, you guys have fun. We booked a lot of time and I was like, there's only three songs to work on. It's acoustic guitar, electric guitar, and we'll just layer it. Like there's not a lot going on. Let's mess around.
Picture this. You finished your first book and nailed it. The plot, the characters, all the twists and turns. This one's a winner, and all you need is the right cover. If you've got my art skills, this is the part where panic usually sets in. Enter the cover villain, hero to writers everywhere. Founded by noted author Remy Flagg, Cover Villain focuses on composite image covers for science fiction and fantasy writers. Give them the details, and they'll craft a cover using popular trends that everyone will want to see. But wait, you say, I've got ideas of my own. No problem, as Cover Villain loves a good collaboration. As they say, our goal is to put a little villain in every cover we make. Want to know more? Then head to covervillain.com and follow them on Facebook and Instagram.
Well, you know what? We are going to be pivoting now, of course, to the YouTube, because, of course, that's what you're definitely known for. 30,000 followers on your own channel. You began with Gameology, doing shows for them. In fact, actually, it was your Try Not to Laugh series that you did with Aiden. That was, I think, the first thing of yours that I saw.
Oh, I can't believe you hung around to say that.
I know, right? I have no idea myself either. I was like,
we have so many terrible memories of that format.
Oh my god, dude! I love that show. That was fucking hilarious. I think like one of the things I remember the most is because the way that the show works is people would send in like funny game clips and you and Aiden would try not to like lose your shit and usually fail miserably.
It was such like corporate YouTube bullshit.
Oh.
You know, where we're like, it wasn't our idea. And the whole format, I wasn't in love with the whole Try Not to Laugh thing, because obviously you have to laugh or you just sit there blank faced.
Right.
So we'd laugh and then people in the comments would be like, these guys suck, these clips aren't funny. And we're like, we know they're not funny. Like across the hundreds of clips we saw over how many episodes we ended up doing before they canned it, there was probably 10 that genuinely made me laugh. And that's why I had Aiden there, because Aiden's such a good laugher.
He is. He really is.
But it was so fake. I hated how fake it was and how fake I felt doing it. Because we, you know, I love an intro. I'm happy to do like a slate, like a hey, welcome to blah blah, like that. That's all, you know, part of it. But then when you get into the actual content, you're on and you have to fake it. It just I hated it. I'm so glad you liked it, but I hated doing it. I hated watching it. It just didn't feel like who we were. And Aiden felt the same way. He hated doing it, and the hate that we received from that particular series, especially on Facebook, was insane. Wow. I don't think we've ever.
Received hate.
Oh yeah, so much. Wow. I don't think we've ever received hate like that.
So was I like the only? Was I like the only person who actually liked it?
Look, I'm sure some people. I'm sure people liked it. You know, and for the viewer's perspective, like regardless of us, you get to watch, you know, funny gaming clips, and some of them will make you chuckle and some of them won't. And it's the ones that won't when you watch us laugh that you're like, ugh, and you roll your eyes.
I get you. But I get you.
Gameology's Facebook page, any content that goes out with me, whether it's a gaming clip or whatever, is just riddled with hate. You would think I'm the most hated person on the internet if you go to their Facebook page. it's the most awful community I've seen in a long time. It's hard to be up on their Facebook page.
Gotcha. All right. Well, then let's talk about your own community, because you have a gigantic fan base, 30,000 followers.
You got like hundreds of views on like all your videos. I want to ask about just like being part of like that community. How that's like gone for you?
My community is amazing. Building them has been weird and fun and heartwarming. Seeing these people from all over the world, when you get, you know, you start a stream up and you just see their names go, and you're like, oh, all these people. I mean, some of them now I know personally, people I brought on as mods to watch over the stream. And there's people in there who've become best friends who didn't know each other before joining the community. People who've met each other and gotten married in the community.
No kidding.
It's... No jokes. There's people in the community who were there when I had 100 subscribers, and they're still hanging around now, you know, 5 years later. I was blowing my nose. What was the original question?
Oh, there was a question, actually. It was about the community. You got it.
Yeah, it's heartwarming. There's people that drop off, you know, people have lives you know, especially during COVID, we ramped up and people were constantly active, and then, you know, they have to go back to their life. So they drop out and then they come back in and say good day. And that took a bit of time to get used to, which sounds kind of fucked up to be like, maybe not fucked up, but like getting used to people dropping out. It's like it's a weird abandonment issue thing. But, you know, that's gotten easier over time to remember that these people have lives and they're not, you know, they'll consume my content when they get the chance. And, you know, opening myself up to new people coming in and joining the community, you know, it's a thing where people come in and go out and other people come in and go out, and some people have stayed all the way through. It's just a constantly changing thing. It's weird to think, like you said before, it's like when we started and you said, oh, apologies if I gush a bit because I've been watching your content. And that's odd to me that people are watching the content and enjoying the content and care about the content.
Yeah.
That reminder is phenomenal.
Yeah. I think like the two things I really enjoy the most are definitely like the horror games you play, because you do all these like cool like indie horror games and you just like lose your shit all the time. And I absolutely love that stuff. Like when you turn the corner and like boom, like jump scare, you just like scream. It's like, oh shit.
Yeah. I do love horror though. Like really love horror. So I scream, but that's just my reaction. I'll go, and then straight back into it. Like I'm not, oh, I can't do this anymore. I can't, you know, I love getting scared. I love horror movies. I love horror games. Horror is probably my favorite genre in video games. If there's a new horror game, I'm on it.
How do you keep this going? Because like you have to be on point, whether you're doing like a Twitch stream or doing a video, like you need to like be there and bring your A game every time.
Well, that's been something that I've struggled with in the last couple of maybe 2 years. Like, but with the stream was the hardest thing because that is like constantly on, and it's the thing that I do most during the week. But I just had to get to a point where I was okay telling the community when I wasn't okay, you know, coming in and being like, look, I'd love to give 110% like always, but I'm just feeling, you know, either I'm a little bit under the weather, or I'm a little bit sad, or I woke up on the wrong side of the bed. Just being okay in that context, just letting people know what's going on. And that turned out to be really the best thing to do, was just to be honest instead of coming on and faking it, or coming on and just being bummed out but not mentioning it, just jumping in the stream being like, hey guys, you know, I'm feeling a bit, you know, miserable today, but you know, let's play some games, let's try and cheer up, let's have a good time. And then over the stream I sort of, you know, I forget and I start enjoying myself again. But I've never really had a hard time, assuming everything's okay, I've never had a hard time turning it on and just like getting in and making content. But when you do it so much throughout the week, yeah, there's times when I'll jump on stream and be like, I don't have it in me today, but let's have a good time.
All right.
What's the process like in terms of just jumping on? Do you have an idea of what you're playing? Or do you just kind of do it on a whim? I know every single streamer and YouTuber's got their own like method to their madness. How do you do it?
There's rarely a plan. Like, I know what I'm going to play, but even sometimes I don't even know what I'm going to play. I like get on stream and I'm like, guys, I don't know what we're doing today. And I'm like, we like go through Steam and like see what we're going to do. But there's zero planning. And on the YouTube content as well. Yeah. Like when I go in occasionally, like I'll say something and I'll think of a meme. Cause if you watch my content, it's a lot of, like memes and clips and stuff intertwined with the gaming footage. And I'll do something and I'll think, oh, that'll be a funny clip to add. And I'll just say to myself, Matt, when you get to this bit, put in the clip of the lady saying he needs some milk, you know, and then continue. And I'm always so scared that one day I'm going to accidentally leave one of those clips in a video where I'm talking to myself. But that's that's sort of the only planning, is like on the fly being like, oh, that'd be funny. I hope I don't forget that when I'm editing. I'll tell myself that for the future. Minimal planning.
That's cool, man.
And what about your first video? Do you remember your first video?
Yeah, I do. I remember
what
it really
were the
well.
Horrors? What were the wins? What were the pitfalls of that?
I remember. My first published, I about 2 years before my current first video. So if you go to my channel and you scroll all the way back, the first video is me and some friends playing The Forest. But that wasn't my first video. About 2 years before that, I started the channel, and I studied media when I was in high school and got really into video editing, and I was doing performing arts and I loved gaming, and I was like, let's just combine all that. I'm going to start making game videos, and I learned how to record and all that sort of stuff. So I put out about 5 videos back then. And the first one I did was me playing Quop. Do you know Quop?
No. What's that?
No.
It's this browser game where you use the buttons Q, W, O, and P. And like Q and W control one leg and O and P control the other leg. And you got to try and get your guy to run. And it's just like a frustrating, puzzly, just stupid little game that it's really, really difficult to get the guy to run. So the majority of the time you're lifting your leg up and just falling over. And that first video was just, and I have done Quop on the channel since. I did it like years later. So there is a Quop video up on the channel that's quite good. But that was the first one I did way back then. And then, 2 years later, I was like, I had a lot of time on my hand. And again, like the EP, I just went, I want to focus on something. I want to put my energy into something. I said, I'm going to make this YouTube channel like a proper YouTube channel. I'm going to put a video out every 3 days. I'm going to do artwork for it. And I'm just going to go in 100%. And that's exactly what I did. So I wiped everything that was on the channel beforehand, which were those videos. And I started by just hitting record when I was playing games with my friends. And that's what that first Forest video was. I said to them, I'm going to record this and I'm going to put it on YouTube. I hope that's okay. And I didn't plan on, putting in all the clips and the funny editing and that. We just played the game and all our mics were dog shit. My mic sounded by far the worst. It's not quality wise. It's not a good video, but I still look back at it really fondly and remember like sitting down and editing and just being really happy when I put it out. I'm like, that's a funny video. It's charming. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Maybe not my best content, but it's charming.
I will listen to old episodes of this show and I'll think, what in the wide blue fuck was I thinking getting behind a mic in the first place? What the hell is this stuttering jackass doing on a radio show? And this was 2009. Okay. So we're talking like 15 years ago now. Actually, we are coming up roundabouts on the 15th anniversary because I started this, I believe, in April of 2009. So, holy shit. I just thought about that.
Coming around.
That's random. Yeah.
I was 14.
I was considerably older. But the thing that I heard years later that makes me feel better is this. The first draft of everything is shit. First thing. Ask a musician. Ask a filmmaker. What was your first thing? They'll say, I don't want to talk about it. It was shit. It was terrible. Fucking hate it. So your first thing may not be great, but you keep at it, and eventually you get better. Or in like my case, you just keep doing like your own thing. There's like no one to fire you.
just never get better.
Exactly.
It just keeps going.
I think that's the GMAT motto. Just don't get better. Just keep going. Do you know Rooster Teeth?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I watched some interview. I think it was Bernie Burns who said it, but it could have been any of them. They said something like, whenever they start a new project, like a new show, I think they did it for Immersion or like whatever new show they're working on, do 2 episodes as tests that no one will ever see, fully produce them, like do it 100%, and then throw them in the bin. Which I thought was like, God, because if you put something out that was good and they're like, no matter how good it is, even if we love it, chuck it in the bin. I don't know if they stuck by that 100%.
Wow.
Or if that continued.
Yeah, well.
But I got that, and I try to do that a little bit, you know, and that's, I scrapped my channel originally. I was like, get rid of that. I had a test. I know how to talk in front of a mic. I know how to record the footage. Now let's try and do it 100%. And we did it for the Bachelors of Art podcast we did for a little while. Put a few test ones on Patreon and then jumped in. And by the time we got to the actual putting out our first episode, we knew what we were doing.
All right. Do you have a favorite video? Is there one that you just automatically think of if someone says, hey, I'm new to your channel, what should I watch?
Yeah. All right. Can I put 2 in that answer?
Go for it.
So it's not my favorite video, but one that's I think of fondly is the Guts and Glory video.
Yes.
Because that's the one that like blew my channel up. You know, it's still a very small channel, but like the actual, that video went viral. You know, it's 50 million views across Facebook. And I just remember during that patch of time, just getting on Facebook and scrolling and seeing my own video just in front of my face on a bunch of different like Lad Bible and Gameology at the time. And it just kept coming up my feed. There's one of my closest friends in the world who lives a town like 2 hours from me. He lived with this guy and he came out, you know, woke up in the morning, went to the kitchen to have breakfast, and his buddy's there watching my video on Facebook. And so he's making breakfast. He's like, what are you watching? He's like, oh, this thing, that's this gaming video. And he's like, and he went over, he's like, that's my friend's voice. And he just like weird stuff like that. That happened. I got recognized in a McDonald's drive-thru. Someone recognized my voice. So that patch of time, I remember I got to sit there and, you know, go on to Social Blade and watch the numbers going up from whatever I was, like 400 subscribers. I think it peaked at like 12,000 subscribers, but just watching those numbers go up was so exciting, just unbelievably exciting. And, you know, 10,000 is nothing in the grand scheme of things, but getting 10,000 out of nowhere, you're like, who are all these people? Why are they watching my stuff? So that holds a big place in my heart. But my actual favorite video is the one that's on the front page of my channel, which is Bloody Mary in VR.
Oh, jeez.
I can't remember. That might be the name of the video as well. It might just be Bloody Mary VR-da, but it's me playing this VR game. And I've never been so scared in my life. It's like the reactions, like that's peak reaction quality. Everything in there, I'm like, this is real and unbelievably funny. And also, I can't play that game anymore. It doesn't work on Oculus or anything like that. When you go to play it, the game doesn't function with new hardware. So it's like, it's this little just piece of history.
Exactly.
it's a great video. And the fear that you hear in my voice is funny to me. And when it's funny to me, that's a good sign. Where I'm watching my own reactions, I'm like, that's pretty fucking funny.
Oh man, I could not do horror VR. I have way too active an imagination. I would not sleep for like a week.
And you don't need an imagination in VR. It's just terrifying.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't even imagine. I've got, you know, my two nephews have got a VR setup, and I just watch them try not to like bump into things and stuff, or fall off the little rug like area that they've got going on, you know, that sort of thing. And I'm like, what are you guys doing? They're like, we're on a roller coaster. I'm like, okay.
I love watching commenters. I like seeing comments from people being like, these reactions are over the top in a horror VR game when they haven't played VR. And I want to sit down with them and be like, if you haven't actually played VR, it's a shocking experience when you get into it. You're like, oh, this is really like fantastic. It's the environments are completely 3D. It's like its own little world. I didn't know what I thought VR would feel like before, but when I got in, I was like, oh, this really is like, this is the future. This is unbelievable. It's weird. And when you put a horror game in that context, it's like you may as well be living out a real horror experience. You know,
I don't know if I want to do that.
Like the monster or the ghost or the murderer or whatever is just physically there in front of you, and you're literally like cowering. You're like, oh God, please don't touch me. And you know that they can't, but you're still like, it's such a unbelievably weird experience, and it's terrifying. It's very funny to get together with a group of people and be like, let's give this a go. Let's try play this game. Yeah.
And then like everyone's watching you just like, no, please, God, no. Mm.
If you're genuine, like if anyone's listening to this and they're genuinely interested in like horror VR, one of the playlists I have on my channel is for The Exorcist Legion VR. I have like every episode of that on my channel. And that thing is just ridiculously scary. If you want a back-to-back horror experience, go check out that playlist.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Curtis?
Yeah, Max?
Your turn, buddy.
My turn for what?
This is such an organized show. I love it.
What are we doing?
I love it. What are we doing? All right.
I'm out of questions.
You get out of here then, Curtis. You get out of here.
All right, I'm gone. See you later, guys.
All right, goodbye. Goodbye. All right, let us then talk about WatchMojo, because you mentioned that earlier. I know that you've recently begun working for them. What kinds of content can people expect if they go looking for that?
That's been really, like, when I used to work for Gameology and, you know, people, when I'm at like a barbecue or a engagement party or a wedding or some out there in the world thing where there's friends and family and people are like, oh, how are you? What are you doing? I would never say what I was actually doing. I'd be like, oh, I work in video editing or whatever, just because I can't be bothered going through the whole thing. Like, oh, YouTube. Oh, do you make a lot of money? I'm like, yeah. Oh, do you pay bill? Yeah. You know, I work for this company called Gameology. Oh, what are they? Yeah, it's just tiring conversation where you're trying to sell yourself to people. WatchMojo has been really great because people know what WatchMojo is. Not everybody, admittedly, but people who frequently hang around YouTube are like, oh, I've seen WatchMojo videos. And I've been watching WatchMojo since I was like 10. So WatchMojo are like the kings of top 10 lists on YouTube. Their main channel, WatchMojo, they'll do top 10 lists on everything. So if you've ever frequented that content, I'm sure you've seen a Mojo video. But I work exclusively on their side channel, Mojo Plays. You know, they still put gaming content out on their main channel, but this is a chance for them to focus on like the more niche or specific lists. You know, instead of like top 10 horror games of all time, it'll be like top 10 horror games of 2024, like smaller focused stuff like that. So that's the kind of stuff that I work on. And the great thing about Mojo is that you sort of work on what you want to do. Like I pitch them lists and ideas and they pitch some back. They have a whole thread of like ideas that they just keep writing down. You go, oh, I want to do that. I want to do that. And you take them. My boss, Rob, has just been so unbelievably welcoming to me and making sure that I'm working on stuff that I want to work on, making room for me to spread my wings. You know, when I got there, he saw what skill set I had. And he was like, let's abuse this skill set and let's get out as much content as we can. You know, I've had, you know, pay rises. They've been like, oh, we'll pay you more here to make more content. And I'm like, yeah, like the whole channel is run by a husband and a wife. And it's a real, like, as much as the channel's massive and they have offshoot channels like Mojo Plays and Miss Mojo and Brick Mojo and all that sort of stuff, they're a real mom and pop shop. Like, it's a real wholesome family environment. And everyone's just pleasant and Canadian. So they're going to be pleasant. that's the sort of content. So for me, it's like anything that I'm interested in. Horror stuff on Mojo Plays will almost always be me. I've been doing a bunch of Final Fantasy stuff, Metal Gear Solid, like stuff that I really, really don't have a hard time writing about, where I don't have to do much research. I'm just typing out scripts.
All right, folks, we are coming down to the end of this conversation. I want to end, actually, but at some point we do need to actually hit the stop button here. But before
what we do,
we sooner or later. I mean, like, we all gotta like work tomorrow, I'm pretty sure. are we gonna just do, okay, like, we, you know what, let's just do like a 10-hour episode. Okay, we'll just go straight through and we'll see what happens.
No, we have to, just gotta be a marathon. It's gotta be 48 hours.
Oh,
all the way through.
We'll talk about that later. In the meantime, though, GMAT, what can folks expect from you down the road? What's like in the near future for you?
Well, like I said, I don't plan anything. So,
good answer.
Just expect more content. Coming out of a long term relationship and all that, like, it's been a weird patch of time where I'm trying to like piece my personal life back together. You know, there's moving and getting back out there and just like sort of life admin stuff that you go through when when your situation changes. So I've been going through that over the last year. And I'm finally like settled. Like, I know I have a house and I've got a lease and, you know, I feel a lot more comfortable in my space. Coincidentally, like, I'm just sort of now, and as you asked me this question, now entering this patch of time where I'm like, all right, time to get back into it. Time to get content out regularly, get back. We've just started the podcast again, the Twitch stream. Like, there's a bunch of cool games coming out. Yeah, just a regular flow of content has come back out. Also, with a smile on my face, I'm happy to be making content again. There's no music projects. There's no folks. There is G-Stream. G-Stream will be coming up soon, which is a yearly stream that we, a 12-hour charity stream that we do. Obviously, it came at a really, it was supposed to happen at the end of last year, but, you know, like I said, my world was turning upside down and I was trying to piece bits back together. So now we're finally, all right, it's time to plan G-Stream, and that'll be coming up in the next month or two. If you want to be a part of that, twitch.tv/TheRealGMAT. It's a fun day. We give away a Nintendo Switch, and this year we're giving away a PS5 as well. Like, there's a lot of support and a lot of different people helping out, you know, right from, you know, Child's Play giving us stuff to give away down to the pizza place around my corner giving me free pizza. Like, it's a bunch of people helping us do this cool thing. I think that's my answer. I'm sticking with it.
All right. I love it. Nice. All right. Well, folks, that is it, folks. That is the end of the episode. Of course, a great thanks to The Real GMAT for joining us, talking about all this stuff. Folks, if you want to learn more, you know where to go. YouTube, it's The Real GMAT. Definitely check out Brother Band on Spotify. Check out his Twitch stream. Just check it all out, guys. Check out the podcast, too. The podcast is fucking amazing. And very much looking forward to the next time we get to talk, sir.
Thanks for having me on, guys. That was fun. I just did another podcast with these girls in the US. Two Birds, One Brain is their podcast. And I just like talking with people. I like chatting with interesting, cool people.
Called us cool. We got
he did call us cool. It's confirmed. Stop denying things, awesome. Folks,
We are actually cool. All right, folks, thank you again for joining us. As always, Curtis, great have you here, man. And we'll see you all next time.
Enjoying the podcast? Get even more of the content you love from artists around the world on Citywide Bites. Experience the show live on Saturdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, only on Instagram. With our interactive short-form interview series, you can ask your questions and be a part of the action. Hosted by Max Bowen.
Take me down to the half-star bay. Find the words I wanna say when you're listening. Drive along that seaside road. Find your favorite place you wanna go. We turned several ways trying to get home, but home wasn't meant to feel so alone. Half-star bay is the only place I wanna be. Let's build our home in half-star bay. We'll live alone. We'll find a way. Do your worst in half-star bay. We'll make it work in half-star bay. Driving down to the half-star bay. Make the most of a limited stay. Wear my coat and watch the blue. Doesn't matter when I'm with you. The wind is blowing us down, time to hide away. Get inside and I'll keep you safe. Half Star Bay is the only place we'll ever be. Let's build a home in Half Star Bay. We'll live alone. We'll find a way. Do your worst in Half Star Bay. We'll make it work in Half Star Bay. Let's build a home in Half Star Bay. We'll live alone in Half Star Bay.
And with that, we bring this episode to a close. Thanks for listening, and if you haven't already, check us out on Facebook under Citywide Blackout, and Twitter and Instagram under Citywide Max. You can catch this and all your favorite episodes on your favorite podcast platform, and new episodes are added every week, as well as on Boston Free Radio every Saturday at 10 p.m. You get at me at citywidemax@yahoo.com if you want to suggest a guest, submit your music, or just drop us a line. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you next time.